We will have two speakers today. We will start with Claire M, and then we will have Pat O.C. These will be introduced when it is time to hear their share. Claire M will be sharing on topic on tradition one, and following that, Pat O will be sharing on the second tradition. Danielle, would you like to start recording this meeting for us, please? Thank you very much. So our first speaker today is Claire M. Claire has been in OA for 6 years and 9 months and has been abstinent for 6.5 months, giving away some £205. And she says the program has absolutely saved her life. I have the privilege of working alongside Claire in a couple of capacities, and she has an amazing story. And so now, Claire, would you like to unmute yourself and share with us for 20 minutes on what tradition one is and what it means to you? And please, would you let us know how you wish to be timed? You have up to 20 minutes, but you don't have to use all that. But if you let us know how you want to be timed, that would be good.
A 5-minute warning, is that cool? Just give me a 5-minute.
Thank you very much,
Claire. Okay. And I might not talk that long, and if I don't, then I'll let you know. Hi, everyone. I'm Claire. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. Just by way of a little bit of background about me, because I think it's always important to claim my seat. I actually came to my first OA meetings over some 20 years ago. I have a sibling that's been in program and abstinent for 25 years, but I wasn't ready to hear the message. And so I went back out and gained and lost 100 pounds 3 times. 5 foot tall woman. I'm just going to let you know from where I came from. I'll stop my. When I came into OA, I was over 400 pounds. I don't know what my top weight was because I wouldn't go to get weighed on a special scale, right? Because after a certain point, my doctor's office scale wouldn't weigh me anymore. And the first time I had to do that was humiliating enough, so I just didn't go back again. So I came into OA with the gift of desperation. I was angry. I was I had basically been brought to my knees by a number of financial and physical things, and not the least of which is I got a form of cancer that is very often associated with obesity. And I often say that I was the jaywalker in the big book, because I knew I was at risk for this cancer and I couldn't stop, right? I'd lose weight, gain it back, lose weight, gain it back, lose weight, gain it back, gain more back. So the miracle for me is that I am in, been abstinent for about six years and 6 months. And I am maintaining for over 3 years and over 200 pound weight loss. And that for me is, you know, some people give it away. I didn't give it away, I lost it. I say I gained love and sanity. That's really what I gained. So that's enough about where I came from. But I also came from a place of a lot of anger and isolation. Not, you know, I always had a lot of friends. I'm very blessed. I've always had really, and good friends, really good friends. And I was always able to perform in business, which when I look back on it is amazing to me, because how did I walk into meetings and have people had to find me chairs, you know? So I just have been very blessed that way. But in many ways, I was very isolated and my disease caused that. You know, I was isolated because I couldn't physically show up for life, literally. I couldn't fit in chairs. I couldn't walk upstairs. So the notion of unity for someone who comes from a place of isolation like me is really hard. And that's the spiritual principle behind the first tradition, right, is unity. I also am one of, I was one of 6 children in a very dysfunctional family where you had to sort of survive or not, right? I'm an incest survivor. I was abused for a significant part of my childhood. And again, very isolating. Makes you know, food was my friend. Food was my friend until it started to kill me. So again, the principle of unity, really hard for me because it implies trust, right? It implies trust in a higher power. It implies trust in the fellowship. It implies trust in the other fellows. It implies trust in a service structure. And trust from someone with my background is not easy to come by, right? So it really, working this tradition also implies my working my steps, and working every tradition implies working my steps. So for anyone who is not familiar with the tradition, right, tradition one, I just want to just read something from the long form of it in the big book. Okay, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close after, afterward. And I think that's really important. The short form of the tradition, right, in its origin, is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. But I think that balance there is really important. And I was always taught, when I studied the traditions, I was taught to do it from the perspective of how do I apply that tradition in my life, not just in OA, right? How do I apply that in my daily life? Because in doing that and applying the traditions, it's what allows me to work with others. And working with others was not easy from my background, not only because of trust, my largest character defect is anger. So I could go from 0 to 100 in less than a second. And learning to work with others with love and patience and tolerance and kindness, wow, that took me a lot of work. It took me a heck of a lot of step work. It took me a lot of work in doing service. So I always say that service saves my life. And I thank the person who asked me to come here and speak today, because I had a situation today that was just, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm far from it. And I had a situation in service that was driving me bananas. And I needed to get back to the principle of unity, right? I needed to remember why I'm here. I'm here because my life depends upon it. That's why I'm here. And when I give service, it's because my life depends upon it. That's first, it does. But I give service also because I want to be of maximal usefulness to my higher power, because this program saved my life. And that tradition that our common welfare comes first always, always stands out to me. And I have to remind myself of that quite often. And I also have to remind myself that that little line that came out of the big book, that the individual comes right behind that, is so important. You know, because I came into a place where I wanted to be the controller and director of everything. And now all of a sudden, I might even in doing service have responsibility for everything, but I can't be the controller and director of everything, right? I have to surrender to group conscience. Sometimes I don't agree with group conscience, but I have to, you know, I have to abide by it. I have to take into interest the individuals who are participating in whatever service I'm doing and make sure that their needs are given consideration, as well as the whatever I'm doing service on as a whole. So I've been really blessed in OA. I've had some really hard experiences that have taught me really well, right? When I first came in, there was a member that did not like me for a variety of reasons. And I don't think any of those really matter. And was continually trying to pick at me. And very early on, when you come from big numbers, you lose the first 100 pounds really quickly. So people notice it. It's like real quick. It comes off real easy. The next 100, not quite so easy. But the first 100 comes off real easy. So that, you know, gives you some kind of status in the room, which there is no status, right? There is no status or unity. Like it doesn't exist, right? It just meant I was in my disease, like, don't hit my bottom, right? It's not a sign of anything other than I hit a really low bottom, right? But I had to learn to deal with that situation. And I learned really on that I didn't need to engage in it, right? I didn't need to show up for the fight. It's not just that I cease fighting anyone or, you know, anything. I didn't need to show up for the fight because the unity was more important, because I was sponsoring people at that point who were as desperate as I was when I came in, and their lives depended on this. And if I got into the sandbox and fight over little details that I disagreed with about at a meeting, or, you know, if something they said was insulting me and I responded to that, I'd be putting my life at risk and the people that I was working with's life at risk. And I'm kind of grateful now that that person was there for me, right? Because here I came with my largest defect of anger, and I had to learn to check my anger. And I very rarely, and I'm not going to say at all, because I do, I still comes out every now and then, but very rarely comes out anymore anger, right? A character defect is lifted quite often, but there are still times it comes out. And I have to remind myself of that, not just in OA, but outside of OA. Like if I'm working on a project, it's very hard in the business world sometimes to look for unity, right? Really hard, but I can still do it. I can still approach a situation with honesty. Doesn't always work out, but I can still do it. It's hard in personal relationships to look for unity. You know, I have four brothers, very hard, right? Not easy, but I can still, again, do that. And I can do it just taking into consideration. I use talk, tolerance, acceptance, love, and kindness. I just say it out loud to myself. Talk, talk, talk. Right. And I take myself back to that place. I later on in my service, this past year has been a really incredible example to me of OA unity. At the beginning of this time period, right, when a lot of our face-to-face meetings were closed down for anyone that had gone to face-to-face meetings, it was really fearful. And I, at the time, ended up being one of the intergroup officers in a face-to-face intergroup. And the transformation was really difficult for people, right? Some people didn't want to go to these Zoom meetings. Some people were angry at me about going to the Zoom meetings. Some people were fearful. And it was a gift for me because I learned that I had to move past the fear and the anger and the manifestation of that in people into what was best for the group as a whole, like what was best for my intergroup as a whole. And I came back again to this principle. In the OA 12 and 12, there's a list of questions there. And my earnest suggestion is, if you never looked at those, to look at them and ask them of yourself. How do you apply those in your life? And when you read the tradition again, go back to how do I apply it in my life, but also ask, how do you apply it in your service? And that's any form of service, right? We all do service at different levels. Coming to a meeting is service to others, showing up at a meeting. And so when you attend your business meeting, how do you deal with that? When a member needs help, how do you deal with that? What do you do? You know, do you reach out the heart and hand? That's unity, right? Unity is, to me, how we, in my program, it's how I not only practice the principles, but what I do. And so those lessons are so important. The other lesson I had was very early on, we did Zoom trainings of face-to-face meetings that needed to learn how to do Zoom. And I saw people show up for those trainings that had no knowledge of this technology whatsoever. Zero. None. But it was their love of fellowship It was very often their love of their intergroup or their meeting. It wasn't even their own survival. It was their love of their higher power, their love of wanting to make sure their meeting continued, their love of wanting to make sure that their intergroup continued, that had literally, I don't even know, thousands probably at this point, of people who showed up for training of a technology that many people didn't understand or know anything about. And I have to say that was a humbling experience to witness that. That like blew me away, that people were willing to go past that fear. Because we do need it. We need unity to survive. There's no doubt. We need unity to survive. And I think the other part of that, that really to this day, really just kind of blows me away. We later on that year did the first virtual region convention, and a lot of those same people showed up to do service again, right? In a show of unity, right? Like that was really beautiful. It might not have been their region. It might not have been their meeting. It might not have been, but people showed up, right? Showed up. And those have been really powerful examples to me of what this fellowship can do when we work together. You know, our actions and what we do in working our program in unity doesn't just impact us, it impacts our meetings, it impacts our intergroup, it impacts our region, it impacts the OA world as a whole, but it also impacts every individual that comes into an OA room. I'll give you, right now I'm dealing with a cybersecurity issue of data, of people who are coming to OA things in the virtual region. That's people, that data is people, right? I have to remind myself of that. And coming here today was, that's why this was a great help for me, right? Because I had to remind myself that behind the words data, which is someone's name, is an OA fellow who's reaching out their hands. And on some level, all of us, I think is, you know, for me, I'm going to say for me, when I work my program, that's one of the things that I have to ask my higher power. Like, what do I do today that makes my meeting more unified? What do I do today that brings that principle into my life and into my OA practice? And I think that's really, really important. And what do I do today to make the common welfare very important? Did I have my 5-minute warning? Or did I not hear it? yeah, okay. So I would say that, you know, carrying this, the principles in all our affairs begins with unity. I really do believe that. It begins with unity. And to me, that's an essence to, in my program, of when I know I'm spiritually fit. I'm not always spiritually fit. I don't always have that great conscious contact with my higher power. And I know when I'm deviating from a principle of unity, I'm deviating from being spiritually fit. Like, I know it. I call myself out on it. I know it. And I work that into my daily 10th step. Like, what did I do today for the fellowship? And part of that is, you know, maintaining that tradition. It's not easy. It's not always easy. But I think it's ever so important for our survival. You know, to me, to eat is to die. I always say I don't have another bottom. My bottom is take out a shovel and dig me a grave. That's my next bottom. I can't afford the luxury of fighting with you over some principle. I can't afford it. I will eat over that, right? And I have to take into consideration that other members will eat over that too, right? So when I have a disagreement, I'm responsible for being honest about my disagreement, but I'm also responsible for how I express that disagreement and what actions I take, because what I do can impact others. It's not, I'm not saying I control anyone else's recovery, I don't, but I do have a responsibility for carrying the message. And part of that message is that, you know, OA unity is important, and the individual comes right behind that, right? The individual, and that's why I read that to start with, because I think that often gets lost. You know, that's why we look for substantial unanimity in a lot of our decisions, so that the group conscience really is a group conscience, and it's not, you know, split off. So I think I probably have gone where I would go. I just would say, you know, this program saved my life. And I encourage everyone to really study the traditions and really look at them, because it changed me personally when I studied the traditions, from how do I apply them in my life? How do I apply the traditions, and how do I apply the spiritual principles of the traditions? Those two questions, when I went tradition and step by step, literally changed my life. It was as much part of my spiritual awakening as anything. So I'm grateful that you asked me here today. And I think that I'm going to end right there and give you all a lot of love. And thank you all for being here tonight.
Thank you very much, Claire. Sorry I didn't give you a 5-minute one, because of the lockdown settings we've got at the moment. Because of the lockdown settings, I couldn't unmute myself, so I was sort of saying 3 minutes, but obviously you couldn't see me. But my apologies for that. So thank you very much for sharing with us in relation to step tradition one. So up next, we have Pat O.C., who will unmute herself, or Daniel will unmute her at least, who will now share with us on tradition two. For up to 20 minutes, and I will be not muting myself so that I can call time for you, Pat. And how would you like that time given?
Oh, Charlotte, I'll take that 5-minute waving frantically. I've got you on gallery view, so I think I'll see it. And I don't intend to go 20 minutes. I do have one question though. How long is this meeting?
This meeting lasts 1 hour.
Okay. All right. So I definitely don't intend to go 20 minutes, because I'm going to pose a question that I'd love to hear shares on. So I'll try and stop shorter so I can hear those shares. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlotte. And thank you all. Like Claire, I'm very grateful to be here. And I was really grateful to be given the homework assignment on tradition two. And it's a nice 1-2 punch, excuse the pun, Claire, to follow from tradition one to tradition two. And guess what, guys? There's a reason they're in the order they're in too. And listening to Claire share about unity helped me get why the next tradition, which is, let's get it started. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. So a little bit about me. I live in Beaverton, Oregon, on Pacific Standard Time, if you call me. And I want to also thank you. I'm not big on weekend meetings, but I might try to come back to this meeting, because I think a chance to study the traditions as a group is fabulous. Because my pitch about tradition two is going to be how we all carry the responsibility on this one. So on mutually, we all have to be involved. That's what our fellowship needs. And that's what we are called on individually to work together on. So unity is first, right? We can't do anything if there isn't an us to do it with. Okay. But this idea that is unique to the 12-step fellowships, which is that we have a higher authority and we literally have a higher power that is the only authority in our fellowship. There's no bosses. I have a friend that I do a newcomer meeting with, and he said, nobody's earning any yachts out of this, guys. There's no CEOs. There's nothing like that. The way we are governed, okay, is to govern ourselves. There is no more democratic organization in the world than a 12-step fellowship, in my opinion. So anyway, so I come at this. I've been a member of OA for a little bit over 10 years. I'm a rusty trustee. And so supposedly, like the guardians of the galaxy, the trustees are the guardians of the traditions. Well, I got to say, I think that's bunk. Because the fact is, if every single fellow doesn't buy in to the importance of the traditions, our fellowship will not survive. If we're not all in there working it, we can't do this. Because, you know, I was very early on, I was encouraged when I read in describing in step one that maybe you've got this disease because you weren't meant to be to go through it alone. And that meant a lot to me, that this was a we program. So we is very much expressed in what a group conscience is. And I'd like to share with you something we've been going through at my inner group lately, which pointed out the importance of this. Group conscience is not just a nice idea. It actually has to be a working part of what our meetings are about, our groups. Whether it's at our individual meetings, at our service level, any of it, it has to be a functional part of that. And we had an issue of a disruptive member in one of the meetings. It actually was a kind of a sexual predator type of thing. So it wasn't pleasant at all. But this is classic kind of stuff that people suffer in silence. They think it's just happening to them, that they're getting the weird texts or a chat in the chat or whatever. And that's exactly the environment, you know, keep it in the dark, that this kind of stuff prospers in, right? So that group went through a lot of hell, but they also worked it through using tradition two, group conscience. And they came to the inner group. We worked it back and forth as far as supporting them, helping them with their group conscience process and all of that, and came to a resolution that ended up, you know, yucky as the situation was, ended up helping the meeting. I think it even helped the disruptive member. That's way cool, because the person was treated with love and respect, but also boundaries. Okay. It ended up helping other meetings because it pointed out how this can only happen if you all stay quiet about it. So if nobody speaks up that something's going awry, nobody's going to know. Okay. It helped everybody with learning again about the importance of group conscience. Group conscience isn't there because it's easy. And I gotta say, that's probably true of most of our program. It's not there because it's easy. It's there because when you do it, it makes a difference. And that is very, very much what happened here. And then this ties in with the principle of tradition two, which is trust. I don't know about any of you. That wasn't a particularly strong suit for me when I came in the door. Trust was not an easy thing. I remember when they handed around the old newcomer package and everybody wrote their name on the outside of that envelope and their phone numbers. I got that and I'm like, yeah, right. Like, I'm going to call any of these people. And my first meeting was a noon meeting and they said, we go to lunch after this meeting. And I'm like, oh my God, they want me to eat in front of them. Are they crazy? This is not going to happen. So trust was not an easy thing for me. Trusting a group. Oh my God. Because of course I know better, and I know better for you and you and you too. So the idea that the thing we're trusting is that higher power is with us. And as we go through the process of trying to determine what is best for us all in unity and for the good of our meeting, our fellowship, whatever the level is, that that we're asking higher power to be with us while we sort that out. Not that our end result is going to be so letter perfect, but the fact is, if everybody got listened to and we chose what we felt the consensus of the group was that this would be a good way to go forward, we're going to give it a try. We know that the honesty of that is what's going to make it safe for us. Doesn't mean we're going to be right, but it means we're going to be in a good spot, because my basic rule of thumb these days is that honesty never takes me any place I shouldn't go. So same with the group conscience, because when it's done in an open, honest, and trusting way, it'll take you someplace you should probably go. You may not know all the ramifications of where that's going, but that's okay. We don't have to. We just know that we can trust. This is the way we can start forward. So my question to you on this is, I'd like you to think about, in if you care to, think about a time you've trusted that it worked out, where you really gave it over to trust and it worked out. And for those of you, and it could have been in a group conscience, it could have been in a service level, like at your inner group, could have been in your relationships, could have been anywhere, but where when you trusted and you listened, you just went with it and it worked out. One of the ways I got trust was to act as if, and just, okay, they say that this can work. They say that if we just listen to one another and we move forward, it can work. When I was able to do that, then I actually could see the good result happening. Not 100% of the time, but boy, a lot of the time. So if you want to think about that and share on that, I would be really interested in hearing some of those kind of stories. So here we are in our unique 12-step fellowship that operates without any bosses, without anybody in charge except higher power, which, quite honestly, the person has a great resume for the entity has a great resume for the job, I agree, but it's where we don't know where it's necessarily going. One of the things that absolutely floors me is when we're reading the big book at one of my meetings right now, where we read literature and we read it cover to cover. So right now we're reading the big book, and it just floors me to see what trust did there. They didn't know what the heck they were doing. They had absolutely no idea. And now millions and millions of lives later, the last count I heard is that there were over 300 12-step fellowships in the world dealing with a huge range of human behavior. And that to me, I mean, talk about trust, talk about a miracle. We get to be in a really fun fellowship, right, guys? It is. We're not a glum lot. It's a fun fellowship. And we get the pleasure of hearing these little jewels from people in our meetings, these little, oh my God, that's a nugget. Of having our ears open and our hearts open because we trust. And for me, at least, since that was such a new feeling, it was really, really great. So, but here's something to think about. On tradition 2, it's saying that we don't get to progress in our fellowship. And then of course, in our own, I like Claire's reference, spiritual fitness. We don't get to progress unless we actually engage. So think about your own meetings. Do you have a regular group conscience? In other words, on a regular basis. And I know, for instance, in some of my meetings, we schedule business meetings, you know, on months that have an R in them or something. I don't know. I can't figure out all the schedule sometimes. Anyway, but I think that may leave the wrong impression. Are we saying in our meetings, is there on a regular basis, is there anything we can do to make sure that this experience is working the best it can for us together, okay? Kind of a check-in, if you will. That group conscience is really a way that we go forward, not just something that occasionally happens when a crisis hits, for instance. Because we need to know each other on some of the easy things if we're gonna deal with some of the hard things, right? That was another lesson we got out of the recent experience we had with the disruptive fellow, is that that was a real toughie. A lot of people felt baptized by fire on that group conscience. It didn't go, you know, smooth as silk, okay? But we got there, we learned. But if that had been a regular feature of our meetings, a much more regular feature, could this have come out sooner? Could this have been dealt with perhaps in a less stressful way? I know it was really hard. One of my sponsees was in that meeting and I know it stressed the heck out of her. So that's something to think about in terms of making this a living tradition in our fellowship. And if you do it as a living tradition in the fellowship, it can't help but bleed out also into your life, right? In other words, things that we practice and learn and get comfortable with in our safe place, which for me is with you all, then I get to take it out into the outer world much more effectively. I sometimes don't even know what's happening, but I find myself, for instance, asking for input where I never asked before on a group that I coordinate a bunch of volunteers. And it used to just be pat show. I move the chess pieces, do what I say. Well, over time that changed to, do you guys have any ideas for how we could do this better? And really mean it. And guess what? I learned so much and we do it so much better. So when you put it in practice in your safe place, in your meeting, make it happen, then you'll find you'll also be able to take that in other aspects of your life and get the real payoff all over, which is your safe places expand. And pretty soon every place is feeling way safer all the time. So that's it for me. I want to have time for shares. So I want to hear any trust stories. Thank you.